Hello and welcome to Rhythm and Brews. My guest today is my good friend Dave Druin. Hey Dave, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's a good time.
You're here today to talk about the Foo Fighters.
I am, which is fantastic.
Would you call them one of your favorite bands?
They are easily in my top three.
And so tell me how and when you got into the Foo Fighters.
Oh, God. I've been listening to the Foo Fighters since, I want to say, maybe freshman year of high school.
I always forget how old are you. How old you are. Seriously, how old are you?
I'm going to be 30 in April.
Okay. So you're just a couple years behind me. I'm 31.
Yep.
So you got into them well before I did, because I've mentioned this before on the show, but I got into like 90s rock way later than it's like cool to admit. I was like the guy in the mid 2000s being like, honestly, late 2000s being like, dude, Oasis is awesome. And same thing with Foo Fighters. Like, I got into them like super late.
Dude, it's never too late to get in the Foo Fighters.
Yeah. So anyway, all that to say, that's earlier than I would have guessed, but continue.
Yeah, no. As a kid in high school, I would wake up like before going to school, and if I wasn't trying to like crunch in some video game time, I was usually watching MTV just to see like what kind of like weird music videos were actually happening, because they used to actually play that stuff back in the day, and. Like, I would always, like, look forward to, like, seeing, like, Gorillaz, because they had, like, the cool animated stuff. And then Foo Fighters would always, like, come on with, like, these, like, really, like, goofy, like, out there sort of things. Like, Everlong's music video was just this, you could tell, like, you know, Dave Grohl and the other guys were young at the time. And they're just having fun, just doing this weird, like, act, you know, weird-ass, you know, scenario. And it's just so bizarre. And I found that so endearing.
That's such a good point. I never thought of that. But their music videos... Their music is more serious than, say, Blink-182's is.
Yeah.
Their videos are not. I'm thinking specifically of, like, I want to say it's the Breakout video, where it's a crossover with Me, Myself, and Irene. And yeah, they do, like, the dick and the popcorn bit in the video. Yeah, I could be confusing the songs, but they had goofy videos.
Yeah, like you could tell they're just having fun with it. You can tell they love the music, and they just had like part of the industry at the time was you got to make the video to go with it. So they're just like, fuck it, we'll do whatever we want and just have fun.
And I think that's going to be the theme, the thread throughout this whole episode, is that Dave Grohl is the fucking man.
Yeah, dude. Did you watch that YouTube video I linked you where he's talking about how...
I didn't watch it yet.
Man, it's... If you haven't... If no one knows what I'm talking about, Dave Grohl, Foo Fighters in general, has a six-minute-long animated video on YouTube. If you just search for Foo Fighters Concrete and Gold, it'll be one of the first couple of results. And just Dave Grohl telling the story about how they got the producer that he wanted for the new album, and how they met like years ago, and just all the people that were in the studio that they got to come on the album and collaborate with. And it's just him just talking so candidly and nonchalantly about just, like, he still talks like Foo Fighters haven't made it big. Like, everything is just like we can go bigger, we can do better. And he's just like, he just comes off as such a down to earth guy, which is why I think he just resonates so much.
I really get the sense from him that he's constantly striving for status in a good way. Like, yeah, he's trying to be like Led Zeppelin, or like what he wants to be remembered as, like a classic rock act. And that really comes through in how they never seem satisfied. There's no Foo Fighters album that's like a copy of what they did on the last album.
No.
They're constantly innovating and always doing something new. We'll get into more detail about that as we get into their specific albums, but I just have so much respect for Dave Grohl as an artist, as a musician, and as you said, as like a down-to-earth guy who's just like goofy like do a goofy music video, but also even be like in like an Andy Samberg digital short and be weird there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he just is like a fucking cool guy.
Dude, there's an incredible video. I don't remember when it occurred, but like they're playing a show, and you know, middle of the song, Dave Grohl cuts it and calls the dude out who's apparently starting a fight in like in the back of the room, goes, "Listen, motherfucker, you come to my show to fucking dance, not start a fight. So get the fuck out of here."
Did you see their Rickroll video that they did?
Oh, dude, fucking so good.
One of the best ones out there for sure.
I have Dave gets talked about a lot because he obviously found the band. And he's definitely the front man because he makes himself the face of the Foo Fighters. But like all those guys, everyone that collaborates in it, like they all give off that same kind of vibe where they love music. They love what they're doing. And they're so appreciative of the fact that they can keep doing it because people love what they're doing.
You and I are going to bro down like just totally over Dave Grohl in general and the Foo Fighters. But before we do that, we always start with a segment we call BYOB. Where we talk about the beers we brought and why. So for anybody listening who doesn't know Dave, he is not a beer guy.
No.
That's a fair statement, right?
Yeah,
You literally messaged me, "Do I have to drink beer?" And my response was, "Not as your primary booze, but I'm going to force you to drink beer during the show."
And that's fair. Like it's not that like I'm like, "Oh, it's beer, I'm not going to touch it." Like I've tried and no matter what I try, I just can't find anything that resonates with me.
Sure. It's not like Chinmo and vegetables. Like you've actually tried this.
Yeah, no, I don't just keep myself to hot dogs and mac and cheese.
Ooh, gross. Can you imagine a hot dog mac and cheese alcohol?
Oh God. That's like the pepper that Amanda had before.
But you actually do have a thoughtful beverage, which is not true of everybody who comes on the show not wanting to drink beer. So tell me about what you're drinking and why.
Yeah, so I am drinking Crown Royal Whiskey with cherry Coca-Cola, and I'm drinking it because coming on the show, I knew I was going to have a drink, so I looked up, has anyone come up with any just like mixed drinks based on Foo Fighters albums, stuff like that, and I found an interview from like 2009 where they're just talking with them, and he brings up that he's been drinking Crown Royal lately because he thinks it goes down so smooth, and he loves it with Coke. So I picked up some of that, and I picked cherry cola specifically because Crown Royal and cherry cola is kind of by some people cherry popper. And it's my first time on the show.
I've had people come on being like, "And I'm drinking this beer because it's in Tim's fridge." That's like verbatim what some people have said. So good on you. I brought a couple of different beers. So I brought one which is called Grunge. It's a Pacific Northwest style red IPA by Gun Hill Brewing out of the Bronx. The idea there is just, obviously, Dave Grohl is famously originally from Nirvana, one of the most seminal grunge bands out there. So that's kind of the thought there. I also have another beer that I brought, which is more of on a personal note. When I think of you and our relationship and beer and music together, the most memorable memory that
memorable,
I have
memorable event
the most memorable event I can think of is last year when we went down to Omegang Brewery.
That was a good time
to see Cake live. They performed the Omegang, if you don't know, is a American-based Belgian style brewery based in Cooperstown, New York, and they do like outdoor concerts.
Yeah.
Every year they do a concert series, and so we went down to see Cake. I'm famously a 90s rock nerd, so that was right up my alley, and I'm also famously a Belgian beer fan, so
yeah, that was a perfect night for you.
All around so up my alley. So what I brought from Omegang is their Rare Voss Amber Ale. It's delicious if you've never tried it. It's essentially a Belgian style amber. So those are the two beers that I brought. Dave, because I am forcing you to take a sip of one of these, of what I just described, which seems less miserable to you?
I mean, I got crowned to wash them both down, so I'll try both.
You're a good sport. I'm going to start with the Rare Voss. Honestly, that's like what I want to start with.
Okay.
And then later on, once I'm done with this, I'll crack the Grunge second.
All right.
And you can try that one at that point, but we'll have you start with this.
That was actually not terrible.
Yeah, it's delicious. Is it how much of your distaste for beer is the like extremely hoppy, bitter thing that goes on in a lot of beer?
It's, I don't know, like with a lot of it, it's always been the aftertaste that kills me afterwards. Like the initial like flavor that hits is always generally okay to fine, but as it lingers, I just don't want that. Like it just does not get out of my mouth, and I hate it for that.
I hear you. I drink beer sometimes where that's the case for me, where I'm like, fuck this aftertaste. Like, I don't want that. But that's how you learn what beers you like, I guess. All right. So why don't we get into the story of the Foo Fighters? We'll start, I think it makes sense to just go chronologically. So why don't we start with their very first album? It's self-titled, right?
Yeah, self-titled Foo Fighters.
And you had This Is a Call as your kind of call-out song from this album.
Yep. I'm definitely one of those people that when I enjoy a band, I really enjoy the majority of what they play. That goes for, like, Fratelli's. I'm a big Beck fan, Cake. It's very hard to play one of their songs and not for me to enjoy what I'm hearing. But particularly for this album, because it's the first and it was 100% Dave Grohl doing everything, it is definitely very raw because it's his first time taking the lead on something, because Kurt Cobain was definitely the driving force behind Nirvana. But with that, like, this Is a Call definitely stands out to me, because I feel like this is like a very strong piece of the foundation of what makes the Foo Fighters over the years into what they are now.
Absolutely. Like, if even on their latest album, which we mentioned before, they've been innovating for years.
Yeah.
But if they released an album today that had this same song on it, you'd be like, that works.
Yep.
That, you would never, this is, it has all of the elements of a quintessential Foo Fighters song.
Yeah.
Including Dave Grohl's kind of signature voice, which is crazy to me because I like Nirvana a lot, but I read a lot of stories of Dave Grohl and his time in Nirvana and how he was just really intimidated by Kurt Cobain and didn't want to show his songs. He was like, I'll just let it be. I'll let Kurt write the songs and I'll write these on the side just for fun. I think he's got a crazy good voice for being like the drummer that was too scared to show his songs, and it turned out to be a really great songwriter. Nirvana has classics that you just can't trump, and who knows what would have been if Nirvana was allowed to have the kind of discography that the Foo Fighters had. But it's just insane to me that you'd have that much talent in one band, that they could that Nirvana could kind of fade away and then you'd still have the Foo Fighters rise out of the ashes and have the career that they had.
I mean, yeah, that's just kind of the power of personality. Like, it's always a tragedy when, you know, when anyone passes away, especially if they take their own life. And it must, like, I can't imagine having like a close friend like Dave was with Kurt doing that and then going on to be like, well, to cope with it, I'm going to make my own album. Like, that's why he made Foo Fighters, so he could have some catharsis of, you know, what happened with Kurt Cobain. And I feel like Kurt Cobain was much more of not speak ill of the dead, but like more of a kind of like a prima donna sort of mentality, where he wanted to like perfect what he, you know, the right sound and get it, you know, the way he exactly wanted it. And Dave, just like the way we've seen Dave grow over the years, he's a very goofy guy. You know, he's kind of goes with the flow. You know, when you see him in interviews or interacting with people, he's just out to have a good time. So, you know, when you see those two types of personalities collide, you know, that stronger one that is completely focused is going to come out on top, I think.
Although I'll take a little bit of umbrage with you there, only because I think it's pretty well known that on The Color and Shape, Dave Grohl re-recorded all the drum tracks on that album, which does give you that prima donna sense there as well, which is true of a lot of artists. That's similar for Billy Corgan, the Smashing Pumpkins. He famously recorded a lot of his other bandmates' parts on a few of their albums, which was a big point of contention for the band. So all of that to say, I take your point, but I could also... Actually, that's probably a good transition into their next album, Color and Shape. That's the one we were talking about, where specifically Dave Grohl re-recorded a bunch of the drum parts. So the first album we just listened to, he did everything himself. I want to say maybe there were like one or two songs where he had contributors do like a guitar solo or something like that.
There was some contribution for like guitar and drums, but majority of it was him in a studio recording everything himself.
And then after that album, he went out and formed an actual group, and they did a little bit of playing together and doing some live shows, and then set out to record this album. And he's a drummer. They recorded these songs, this album, The Color and Shape. And the dude who played drums for them, after he had laid down his tracks, Dave Grohl was not happy with how it came out, because he, being a drummer,
yeah,
had a very specific idea of how the drums would be played. So he recorded, I want to say, like all but two of the songs. He re-recorded drums on all of them, kind of without telling the drummer, and the drummer found out incidentally and was obviously pissed and left. Honestly, I think maybe for the best, because the drummer that they ended up getting, I'm blanking on his last name now, Taylor...
Don't ask me. I can never keep band members' names straight.
An incredible drummer, and he had also played for Alanis Morissette. He was on Jagged Little Pill. But all that to say, he's a great addition to the band. Has a great voice too. He does a lot of the singing. He does. He has a similar voice to Dave Grohl, actually.
Yeah, I think I might be wrong on this, but I think he sang. He was lead vocal for the song Sunday Rain on the new album Concrete and Gold, and it was very good track.
It's brutal to sing really high-pitched, aggressive vocals throughout concert. So I've seen concert footage of the drummer singing the main vocal parts, where Dave Grohl is singing like a lower harmony of it to save his voice on certain songs like The Pretender. And
which totally makes sense, because I like, even with how he's been doing it for all these years, I don't know how he hasn't destroyed his vocal cords.
Same. And that's the other thing. Like I think his songs are great. He's really impressive from a songwriting perspective, but I also specifically think it's so impressive how good of a singer he is, considering how intimidated he felt in Nirvana. Because if you listen, Color and Shape is my favorite album by the Foo Fighters, and I think his voice he's such a good singer. I can't believe how good of a rock singer he is, but just a singer in general. I love his scream. It's like exactly the register where I would want somebody to be screaming at me.
Because it doesn't get incoherent. You can still hear it. It's not just like incoherent, like yelling in the microphone. You can hear the enunciations. You just get the passion that he's putting into it.
And he is great at the like really high intensity rock stuff, but also you have like singer songwritery things like See You.
Yeah.
Which is, and he still sounds great. He could rival a 90s singer songwriter just from a vocal perspective. It's not just that he's a great rock singer. He's a great singer.
There's an acoustic version of Everlong that is like, to that point you're just making, where it's all very low key. He's just singing along to playing acoustic guitar, and it is one of my favorite versions of that track.
I could talk for forever about The Color and Shape. There, that is honestly one of my albums where I can put it on start to finish and listen to every single song.
Yeah.
There are some lesser known songs on it, but there are no songs that I'm like, this is bad and I want to skip it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is rare honestly, I can't listen to any other Foo Fighters record and say the same thing. That's just for me personally. I am unapologetically a huge 90s rock fan, and I think that's probably part of it. Color and Shape is like exactly the kind of 90s rock that I like. That's why it's such a perfect album to me. It's like stylistically everything I want
out of
a 90s rock album.
Definitely a great album. I might cause some feather ruffling by saying it's not one of my top albums, but Foo Fighters have so many good ones. Like I'm really that fan where I can put on their entire library and just play the whole thing and just have every song play, and at no point am I going over to my computer to hit skip.
I think that's fair. Although I think we'd be remiss. It would be crazy if we skipped over Color and Shape without talking about My Hero and Everlong, which I think hands down are the songs that put them on the map. That's what solidified them as on a level with Nirvana. I'm not saying necessarily in terms of musical history, but more so commercially. Like,
yeah, it elevated them to be in everyone's eyes. Like, you know, people took notice of what they were doing. Monkey Wrench in particular, I like a lot, and I was like, I was super ecstatic back in high school. My friends and I played Guitar Hero a lot. So when Monkey Wrench was on Guitar Hero 2, I was over the freaking moon being able to play that song on that shitty ass plastic guitar.
Yeah, absolutely. Monkey Wrench is great. And it brought a high energy to rock music that you weren't getting in a lot of mainstream rock at the time.
And that's
even to date.
And that's one of the things I love about the Foo Fighters is they flow so well between songs that are low-key or grunge or heavy and then, you know, high energy. And some songs, they do it all in, you know, that one track, and it's just such a trip.
I hadn't listened to their new album all the way through until today. We'll get to it when we get there, mm-hmm. but very first track on there is that way, where it's like a pretty slow acoustic song up right up top, and then it gets heavy the way you'd expect a Foo Fighter song to get.
Yeah,
and so you're all that to say, I think you're exactly right. Like, they do such a good job of kind of doing songs that are across a range of genres and doing them in a really great and compelling way.
Yeah, and it really speaks to the talent that they have as a band to just pull that off again and again while also doing it in new ways. Because like we talked about before, no album is the same as the last one.
Which is maybe a good transition point to their next album, There's Nothing Left to Lose. Your song off of this was M.I.A.
Yeah. It's one of the more low-key ones they have. And this album was really hard for me to pick a song because it's got Learn to Fly, Gimme Stitches, Generator, Aurora, Headwires, M.I.A.
Is this your favorite album by them?
It is definitely, I would have to think about it now. I think it might be because it's just all those songs, like they come on through my playlist regularly when I'm on the car or I'm at home doing whatever. And it'll get to a point where I'm listening to like whatever I'm listening to. I just like I have to pull up one of those songs, no matter what the duration is. I got to have one of those songs playing at some point.
There are so many classics on this. I think Breakout's on this, right?
Breakout too. Oh, I forgot about Breakout. That is terrible. This was a really hard album to choose a favorite song, but M.I.A. I picked because it is absolutely more subdued song, but it still has, like, it's got that, you know, the riff and the drums to it bring some energy that you normally wouldn't get in like a standard type of ballad sort of thing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, even on, if you think of Color and Shape, for example, like February Stars, it's got more energy than that. It's got more intensity to it for sure. And this record, it feels a little bit more standard 90s in a way than maybe Color and Shape does, but in a way that defines the genre rather than imitating it. Mm-hmm. Like songs like Coming Home Next Year, that belonged on the radio in the 90s.
Yeah.
But that, what a fucking great song. And Breakout, I think this may not, you're not a musician, right?
No.
So this may not mean anything to you, but from a songwriting perspective and a music theory perspective, from a chord progression perspective in that song, is so vastly different from what other rock bands were doing at the time. Any rock band that's on mainstream radio.
Yeah.
Like they're not just sticking to a four chord progression and being happy with it. They are doing really interesting things with chords and melody that other rock bands are not doing. And I just think there's something so exciting about that, especially because, as we said, Dave Grohl's not a guy that takes himself too seriously.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that he's
he takes what he does seriously.
Exactly.
He's very passionate about the music he makes.
He doesn't take himself seriously, but he takes his craft seriously.
Yeah.
And there's something that I've just, and he has for decades, and that's something I respect the shit out of.
Yeah. Like, I just love when he pops up in the news or when there's interviews of him to watch. It was the last tour they did for Sonic Highways where they Dave had to leave one time to he had to leave in between two shows in Australia to go back for a father-daughter dance, got food poisoning on the flight back to Australia, did the show but was too sick to meet people. And because people that the people had actually got one in contest like VIP to meet him, and he was too sick, he got in touch with those people and was like, name a time, name a place, you'll have tickets to a Foo Fighters concert so you can meet me. Like, the fame has not gotten to his head whatsoever. And he attributes that partially to the fact that he has two kids that don't give a shit that he's like this big rock star. They're just like, I want a smoothie, daddy. Get me a smoothie now. God, I love that song.
The next album, which I'm not as familiar with, like, I think this is One by One, right?
Yes.
So I obviously know All My Life, and is this the one Times Like These is on?
Yes.
As well?
Yep.
So I know this is where we get into single territory. I know they're singles, but don't know the full albums as well. But definitely really love the singles that came off of these albums.
Yeah, this one I feel like they went for like... especially for like Burn Away and All My Life, I feel like they wanted to go try and get back to a little bit to like their grungier side, and you get like these, you know, heavier riffs, you know, a lot more faster paced songs than what they had just done previously in the last two albums, I think.
I think they were, I mean, Dave Grohl famously has played in a lot of bands, specifically Queens of the Stone Age. Like, this could be a Queens of the Stone Age song here.
Yeah, I can hear that.
And so I think that was part of like a modernization attempt. You know, they were trying to bridge between 90s grunge and 90s rock and modern rock. I want to say this came out like mid 2000s, 2004, 2006, something like that.
2002.
Oh, I'm off by 2 years. But I mean, yeah. I think my point.
Yeah, no, they were.
It's still valid.
You're absolutely still valid. They were. Because, you know, music goes through so many, you know, rapid changes, you know, year to year, decade to decade. And this is definitely them trying to incorporate new things while still holding on to their roots and, you know, still, you know, continue on getting a new audience, but also keeping their old, you know, their original fans still happy with what they're hearing.
And that, I hate putting off conversations, but like that's one of the things that has really stood out to me about their latest album is how much it is still it's still innovative, but it's still them.
Yes.
Like, and it, especially from, what's the one before it?
Sonic Highways.
Sonic Highways, where they're really celebrating music from across the country, like music history from across the country. You can hear that in their latest one, that they've absorbed that and built it into their sound, but without sacrificing what Foo Fighters has been since its inception.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like you don't listen to it, you know, thinking, you know, this sounds like someone else. It's still Foo Fighters, just Foo Fighters in a new way you weren't expecting.
There's something about this part that always reminded me of Monkey Wrench, because it's kind of like, yeah, the bridge where he like gets more and more intense and is screaming by the end before going back into the chorus. So.
Yeah, it's parts like this in Foo Fighters songs that I love the most. In their one of their later albums, Wasting Light, there's a song, Arlandria, that they do a similar thing where they start off low, very intense, and they ramp up. And I love that, you know, spike in energy that they do so well. It's very hard not to sing along with it.
I know. And again, like we said, this is not, if you listen to their new album and you listen to this and you listen to their first album, this is a departure from either of those, but it's still just as engaging and it still sounds like Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
And there's just, I feel like you have to give that credit to Dave Grohl, that he unifies the sound from era to era, no matter what they're playing. It still sounds like a Foo Fighters song, regardless of how much they might change their sound.
I think that comes a lot from just how much respect that that the Foo Fighters clearly have for other genres of music. Like, Dave Grohl's a rock guy, yeah, but, like, he talks about listening to, you know, the Beatles and the Beach Boys and Motorhead, and, like, he has a deep appreciation for what other artists do.
Which I think is evidenced by the fact that he contributes to so many other artists' projects.
Like, the fact that he's the drummer for Tenacious D always is something I love. Yeah,
hilarious. And great. Like, it's not just the drummer for it, but appears in the movie. Isn't he the devil movie?
He's the devil in the Pick of Destiny. It's, oh my God. He's just constantly trying to have fun with what he loves. And it's just hard not appreciate him for that.
Of course. So as I said, that album is kind of an era where I really just knew the singles. I kind of got back into them briefly for this next album, In Your Honor, which is a double album. It's super ambitious. I remember reading an interview with Dave Grohl at the time where he wanted this to be like their White Album or something like that. This is like the album that he was hoping would be their really ambitious album that Foo Fighters were remembered for. We'll start with No Way Back. It's like we said, it's a double album. It starts with a heavier side and then goes to a more acoustic side in its back half.
Yeah, I feel like they definitely hit that goal with this, because it's such a conglomeration of everything they've done up to this point. But at the same time, it's such as a wide breadth of what they do. And they continue to do even now. The highs, the lows, acoustical rock, the riffs, the low energy, the tension they put in the songs. It hits all of that throughout so many tracks.
And without succumbing to butt rock, which is hard. You know what I mean? Like, for a band that came out of the grunge era and to come into that phase of mid-2000s modern rock and not devolve into Nickelback style butt rock that's an accomplishment. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, because other bands did do that. I mean, there are a lot of other post grunge bands where you're like, yikes, in a way that I don't feel about the Foo Fighters. Like,
it's one of those bands.
And this would, I feel like, time wise, this would have been like the time that they devolved into butt rock, and they didn't, in my opinion.
Yeah, this is definitely the time where they would have. If they had not kept trying to push themselves and keep setting goals and challenges for themselves, they would have become a guilty pleasure thing. I feel like that's what it's become, because or just lowbrow entertainment. But they didn't want that for themselves, and it shows with the quality that they keep putting in album after album. I feel like I'm definitely repeating myself every time we talk about it, but they have been a band I've been listening to for almost two decades now, and I just can't stop being how appreciative I am of the type of music they put out. I usually listen to out there sort of stuff. Like, I love Beck and I love the Gorillaz. They just do so many different weird things, and the Foo Fighters do so many different things within the rock medium that. They don't sound like any other rock band. They don't sound like Led Zeppelin. They don't sound like Aerosmith or Motorhead or AC/DC. They're very much their own sound.
And it's not just his voice. Like, obviously, Dave Grohl has a very unique voice, but their guitar sound is very unique too.
Yeah.
Despite the fact, as we've said, that they've evolved so much over the years, but they still have retained a guitar sound that's recognizable, despite the fact that their style overall has definitely changed over the decades.
Yeah, like, there's a video on YouTube. I don't know if you saw it. I think it was like Rock 1000 over in Italy. Basically, this guy organized 1,000 musicians to show up, and vocalists, drummers, guitarists, bassists, and choreographed all of them together singing Learn to Fly as a kind of calling card to Foo Fighters, like, please come tour in Italy. And they responded with, we're coming, like, get ready.
Like we said, they have a very unique sound without being gimmicky, or you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing about them that is ripped off by other bands because it's so cheesy in a butt rock kind of way. Like, it's not lowest common denominator. They are constantly writing cool guitar riffs for their songs that are different than the riffs that they wrote on the last album, but still feel true to them. So it's just, it does make so much sense to me that they would carry that kind of appeal, not just domestically, but internationally.
And it just goes to show like how much work and effort they put into what they do. It has that payoff. Like, for as long as they have the ambition that they've had over the years, they're never going to falter.
Like we said, the album In Your Honor is a double album, the first half being more of a hard rock album, the second half being an acoustic album. So this was your pick off of kind of the back half of the album, the song Miracle.
Yeah, I like the song a lot just because the second disc is a whole contrast from the first one, soft versus to the rock, but I feel like this one is definitely on the far end of that spectrum. And I'm also like, I love this song for its incorporation in the show Scrubs, which I'm a huge fan of. In the episode where Turk and Carla have their daughter Izzy, this is the song they play for the Scrubs soundtrack when everyone is, congratulating them and holding Izzy. So like, it's just a very strong, evocative song for me, like most of the Foo Fighters are. I'm sorry, I'm just kind of like rambling and trailing off at this point, but like, I can't not just listen to the song. It's very difficult for me to do.
This is such an interesting experiment for them. I remember there's a song they have with what's a duet between Dave Grohl and Norah Jones on this half of the record, mm-hmm. Virginia Moon. It's just a really interesting exploration of Dave Grohl's other instincts, I feel like, than the ones that normally get expressed on Foo Fighters albums.
Yeah, if you ask the average person, like, everyone has heard of the Foo Fighters pretty much at this point. And if you ask the average person what's a Foo Fighters song, they're going to, immediately go to the Dave Grohl yell, the rock tracks. They're going to bring up Everlong. They're going to bring up songs like All My Life or DOA. And just this, he's got such a wide breadth of different skills. Like,
that don't get appreciated, for sure. And again, I think his voice is so underappreciated. And I don't know. I feel like you can't knock the songwriting of Kurt Cobain. Like, I love a lot of Nirvana songs, but again, who knows what kind of songwriter Kurt Cobain would have become if it wasn't for his untimely death. But
yeah,
I kind of feel like Dave Grohl, if he wasn't at the time, at least became a stronger songwriter than Kurt Cobain was in his heyday. I don't think he has the same breadth of songwriting expertise that Dave Grohl has. I don't think he has the same vocal range.
Mm-hmm.
It would be blasphemy, I feel like, to say Foo Fighters is a better band than Nirvana, but part of me wants to say that.
For me personally, I will say that I love Foo Fighters a lot more. Like, I do like Nirvana, but Foo Fighters is just such a huge band for me. I love so much of what they do, and it's terrible what happened that put Dave Grohl on this path to do what he's doing now. And if it's possible that we could live in a universe where Nirvana and Foo Fighters exist, that'd be great. But I don't want to live in a universe where Foo Fighters don't exist. They're that big of an entity in music world for me.
And which is not without cause. I feel like they are the last remaining mainstream rock band. Like, we talked about this before on the show. I don't know who else you could point to and say that they are still a significant presence in the mainstream rock world.
Yeah.
At least without pointing to regrettable post-grunge bands like Nickelback and yeah. so forth.
And I think a lot of that, I think, comes down to like just how people view music in general. Like, people can enjoy their shows, but I think American Idol is a huge problem in how people think music gets made. And there's an interview with Dave Grohl, I don't remember how many years ago it was, where he gets pretty pissed off talking about it. He's like, music is not going into a fucking stadium for 8 hours, sing your heart out, and have someone tell you you suck, go home. It's four kids who can barely afford shitty musical instruments, rocking out in a band and sucking until they don't suck and playing shows, and that's how fucking Nirvana happened. Like, he clearly has a very definitive stance on how he thinks music should happen, because for him, it's a very creative process. It's not just a panel of people telling you have it what it takes or you don't, because that's not how music is made. It's an art. It's something you put something of yourself into, and that's what makes the great band so great.
Yeah, well, he's right, and I think he's wrong to a certain extent there, because he's right that that's how it's been historically. And again, that they are kind of the last group that is that way. They're the kind of the last band that, well, even to an extent, you can't really claim that for them, because he had the notoriety that he did from Nirvana. But Nirvana was kind of the last garage band that's still having a ripple effect on the music industry. You know what I mean? Otherwise, it is pretty manufactured. It is very... This person became a celebrity on the internet, so let's give them a record deal and see what they can do. I think that is partially just kind of the trend of where things are going now, where it's very individualized. It's very very focused on YouTube stars and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, everything has definitely shifted a lot based on how we view things through social media and YouTube, Instagram. We have a constant lens into what people are doing in the creative process, and it becomes a matter of, can labels market this person? Not so much, can we market the personality rather than the skills, I feel.
And I wouldn't even say it's like a good thing or a bad thing necessarily, but I just think you learn to live with it. I can't think of any modern rock bands that were formed the same way that bands like Nirvana were formed, where it's just like a couple of kids playing in their basement and they made it big.
Yeah.
Now it's like some douchebag that did a Little Mermaid cover on his YouTube series and then he went on Ellen and then he was huge.
It's like,
that's how it feels now. Or it is very like, somebody's just an incredible talent, and so they got picked up by a label that puts out an album on their behalf or what have you. But it does feel like we don't have the purity of the rock scene like we did maybe 10 or 20 years ago.
It's definitely romanticizing things quite a bit, but I love listening to rock a lot, and it's been kind of demoralizing watching bands like Nickelback, I can't remember the name of the band now. My mother listens to them all the time, and it drives me up the freaking wall.
Slipknot.
Yes, that's exactly who my mother listens to on the regular. But like, it's so disheartening, because you when I'm visiting my folks and they play that music, it's like, it's not that person's sound. It sounds, 60% of it like this other band she listens to, and 40% of it this other band, and that band sounds like them, and they sound like them. It doesn't sound like they're putting in their own creativity and what they want into their music. They're just putting out what, they did that. Oh, so that soul, we'll put that in our album sort of thing. Like, very, puzzle piece sort of thing.
And very reactionary. That's cool. Which is something I can relate to. I hear music and I'm like, oh, I want to make something that's like that. But you shouldn't be a great if that's what your instincts are. You know what I mean? In my opinion, you don't deserve to be.
It's perfectly fine to be inspired
superstar
by something.
Exactly. But you don't deserve to be a superstar by being like, I'm going to recreate something that someone else became a superstar by doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't try to ride on someone else's coattails, do it yourself. Put that work in. Put yourself into, you know, your art, because that's what you're supposed to do. It is very, where, you know, just where's the creativity? Where is where you experimented?
Like I said, there was like a phase where I wasn't as into Foo Fighters, where I wasn't listening to albums all the way through. I just really knew their hit singles. But there was a little bit of a resurgence for me with the album Wasting Light. So why don't we, let's jump into that one. This is your pick off it. It's called Better Off.
Yeah. Oh, I think I picked that off the wrong album. Crap, I mixed that up earlier when I gave you the list.
Why, what do you mean? This is from Wasting Light.
No, Better Off is from an earlier album.
I think they included this on like one of the bonus
tracks. Yeah. This album though, like I feel bad now that I didn't pick one. The new tracks came off it. This album,
this is the one that had a rope on it, right?
Yeah. So I'm gonna pretty much be listing everything off the album. But there's Rope. There's Dear Rosemary. I Should Have Known. Walk was the big one on the radio. Back and Forth, These Days, Arlandria, Bridge Burning. So many good fucking songs on this album.
This album was great.
This, I think at the time, a lot of the reviews were like, this is the album, this is the band's best album to date. And I can, when it released in 2011, I can absolutely see that, because there's so many tracks that just go through the breadth of what they do again, but doing it in a new way. Like I mentioned before, All My Life and Arlandria both have like those moments in the song where it gets really, you know, tense and it starts off like low and it builds up and then it, you know, explodes at the end. But Arlandria just does it, whereas like All My Life has like a very slow sort of like uphill curve. No, that's the opposite of what I want to say. It's got kind of like that slow, little bit, and then it spikes. Arlandria's got like that slow progression of like almost like whispering to like talking level to like he's getting kind of angry to like he's yelling, you know, yelling about what he's pissed off about. And I love that in their songs, how they can just go from something so like soft and just slowly ramp it up and just get you into like the energy of it and just... Well, you know, if you're at a show, you just be, you know, slowly like bobbing your head, like getting into it. And eventually by the end, you're jumping around, just thrashing. It's, oh God, it's so good.
Well, that brings me to my next beer, which means it brings us to your next beer tasting.
Oh boy, oh boy.
So that was the Rare Voss you tasted initially. Now I'm going to make you try the Grunge.
That is grungy.
No?
No, that is not.
So if you had to choose between them, you'd go Rare Voss 100%.
I'd go the Rare Voss. That is not for me. And I'm not, if that's your beer of choice, I apologize. Nothing against you. I'm just a very hard person to pick a beer for.
Yeah, you're not a beer guy.
I'm definitely like a liquor guy. Like peppermint schnapps, McGillicuddy's is one of my favorite things to drink.
You're a brave man to admit that on live radio. Live? That's not right.
I mean, we're doing it right now.
A live podcast would be cool.
That would actually be pretty awesome. I think like Kevin Smith does that. Like he'll be like somewhere like doing the recording the podcast in front of like a crowd. I think for a lot of non-Foo Fighters fans, this album may have gotten passed by because Walk was the radio track, and it's very
associated with a Marvel movie.
Like, yeah, like it's very different.
Thor, if you didn't see it.
Yeah, and it's very different from the rest of the album too. I still think it's a great song, but like it is nothing like Rope. It's nothing like Bridge Burning. Back and Forth, they're just—it's
kind of by the numbers a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. I think that one was like they're like, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they're like, well, we need something, you know, that our label's gonna put on the radio, and like, all right, well, you know, this is the song for that. But it's got so many tracks that they just continue to develop on their own style.
That I feel like they won a Grammy for that song. And I remember being struck by it because they were on stage and they all kind of seemed in awe of it and were like, thanks for continuing to support rock music, because really outside of the Foo Fighters, rock is kind of dead now.
Yeah, it won a Best Rock Album Award. White Limo was chosen for Best Hard Rock Metal Performance, and Walk won both Best Rock Performance and Best Rock Song.
Their album after that is Sonic Highways, which is a really interesting album, I think. Didn't they had a whole HBO show around it?
Yeah, they had a whole... I have not been able to get my hands on it to watch that yet, and I keep kicking myself for it. They did a whole thing where they recorded them recording all the songs, and they went from city to city recording a new song in every city in a different studio to try and kind of like blend in that flavor of the different types of rock across the U.S. that have developed over the years. That was not your favorite either.
I hate shitting on beers that I drink on this show, but this one is
just not for me. Yeah, I picked Feast and the Famine for this one, partially because I felt like I was picking some of like their softer stuff, but like I just love the energy in the song. It's just constantly going the whole time. There's no real slowdowns. Everything is like right now. Like this is, you know, new verse. Instantly get the guitar still going quick. You know, the fast riff, and the whole track just keeps going at that pace.
This is a really great album, in my opinion. I really like songs like Congregation.
Yeah.
They really did a good job of encapsulating sounds from across America while, again, still feeling like the Foo Fighters.
Yeah. What Did I Do and God Is My Witness I like a lot, because that song, about halfway through, completely switches up the overall, like, tone and like beat that's going on, but it still feels right. So like, it just, God, I'm just gonna freaking fanboy out, but like, it's just such a compilation of everything they do in one track, and just how they flip on it so quickly during the track too, and it still feels right. Yeah, there's a lot more. Like, Something From Nothing was the big radio one from this album. And then Feast and the Famine. But it was not so much ballads for the rest of the album, but definitely more of a softer rock. Not you know, the usual high energy people think of from Foo Fighters in this one. And I think that goes along with how they were trying to just incorporate just all the different styles of rock that have come out based on what region people are playing in. You know, like, I grew up in a household with my dad listening to like the Beatles and Lynyrd Skynyrd and, you know, all these different like bands that are classic rock now, like Led Zeppelin. And just, you know, you can tell how they appreciate those different styles, because all these bands from different parts of the US and across the pond in UK, they're all rock bands, but they have such a uniqueness to them and how they, you know, pull it off.
And the broadness of the influences that you can hear in their music from album to album are crazy. Like, you can hear a little bit of like a punk influence and like songs like Monkey Wrench, and then obviously he's got the grunge background, but you can also hear classic rock influence, especially on the latest album. Like, just, they do such a good job. And then modernization, like we said, like they did a great job of bridging the gap between what their roots were and what the modern rock scene was like in the mid 2000s, and they did that well as well.
They don't rest on their laurels at all, and
it comes across that they just want to keep doing what's exciting to them, which is always going to be innovation and never going to be recreation. They want to do something new that's still true to them without just repeating what they've done in the past.
Yeah, I've got a couple of friends that actually don't like the Foo Fighters, which often makes me question things. But like there, when we're talking about it, one of the things was like, oh, it's just Dave Grohl had his glory days in Nirvana and he just wants to keep running it out. I'm like, you clearly have not listened to any other albums since the debut album, because there's nothing Wasting Light, you know, Patience Grace, I can't remember the last two words in the one, but like Sonic Highways, none of those albums sound anything like Nirvana.
Not a single one of the Foo Fighters albums sound like Nirvana. Even the early ones, I would say. Foo Fighters, self-titled and Color and Shape, are not Nirvana albums. They're all distinctly Foo Fighters albums.
Exactly. And like the very first one, Foo Fighters, I'd say is the closest you can make the closest you can get to making the argument, because he had just come out of Nirvana and was making something his own with, you know, in his own influences. But like they've just constantly made a new image for themselves with every album.
And that actually brings us to a record that I'm not as familiar with, and by not as familiar with, I mean I've never heard of. This is an EP that you put on your list.
I did. Saint Cecilia.
Yeah. So I'll throw the song on.
Yeah, I put the title track from the album on it. It came out 2015. I got kind of blindsided by it because I was listening to the radio and
2013, did you say?
I think 2015.
Okay.
I got blindsided by it because I hadn't heard anything recently from them since Sonic High. I think Sonic Highways came out before this. Yeah, I did. So I wasn't expecting this, and then I heard Saint Cecilia on the radio. I was like, holy shit, it's a new Foo Fighters song. And went and looked at the EP, and it's five different tracks. There's Sean, Save Your Breath, Iron Rooster, The Never Ending Sigh. And they're all tracks like...
Also, you know I'm a big pun boy, so Save Your Breath is so up my alley. S-A-V-I-O-R, breath.
And like, it's a really strong EP. I think Iron Rooster, for me, is the only real weak one on there, but it's still a good song. Sean and Never Ending Sigh are on... Never Ending Sigh is especially on the heavier side of what Foo Fighters do. Sean is kind of like the middle ground between Saint Cecilia in there. And it was so refreshing to hear, again, something new from them. It even wasn't like a full album. It's just five quick tracks, and they put it out there as the EP. And it was such a great in between the two albums that they're clearly still working on stuff. They feel, you know, they're like, we don't have a whole album, but we're still going to put this out there for people to listen to. And I love the rhythm of it. I love the beat. This song in particular, I can't not sing along to it in my car. It's one of my, this is one of my favorite songs they put out, hands down.
And again, this would make sense on any of their albums. Like, this could go mid-90s. It could go mid-2000s. Like, this, it's still true to them without feeling dated.
Yeah. It's... They're... God. It's... And the songwriting, like, has just gotten so good over the years. The lyrics are so... I don't want to... Like, it feels kind of passe to say, like, they're catchy, because usually you just hear like a pop song's like, oh, you know, you want to sing along to it. But like, you know, he's not doing his usual like impossible to imitate like Dave Grohl yell. He's just straight out singing sing along the tunes, and you can't help but want to sing along with him.
When did you say this came out? 2015. I haven't heard any of these songs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no. This doesn't ring any bells for me. You said you heard this on the radio?
Yeah.
I hate to put you on trial, but...
For a while, with my old car, there was a while where my... the only thing that worked in my car for the radio was the AM-FM tuner. So I was listening to, I think it was 92.9 here in Massachusetts, and they had this come on, and I was completely blindsided by the track. I had no idea that the EP had come out.
Yeah, I never even heard of it until you put it on your list.
Such a good song.
And I guess that brings us to their most recent album, Concrete and Gold.
This album, I have been struggling to not listen to it constantly. Run and The Sky's Neighborhood have been the tracks they've been putting out for people to listen to. They're the first ones they showed off. Both great tracks. Sky the Neighborhood, I absolutely adore that song. I chose, though, Make It Right because I just love the energy of this song. You got, you know, right now you got the slow, kind of like you're waiting for something to happen with, you know, the drums and the guitar riff. And then just they come in, they just come in with the first verse, and it's again, like, it's like with Saint Cecilia for me. It's so catchy. I can't not sing along to it, and I'm struggling real hard not to right now.
It's very riffy. It's a very riffy album in a way that I love. Like it feels like them in that sense that it's really riffy, but also it evokes like Creedence Clearwater Revival. Like it's got that kind of like classic rock feel to it where they like incorporated that. And I don't know. There's something so refreshing about it because it still feels like, it feels like a Foo Fighters album, but it doesn't feel like
it's Foo Fighters.
They're ripping anybody off. They just incorporated new styles and sounds into what they're putting out there.
It's just Foo Fighters in a new way again. Like they keep finding new ways to reinvent their brand and their sound over and over again. I think this album's got a lot of great tracks on it too. Another big one for me on this one is La Di Da and Arrows, both really good tracks. I think a big part of what made this album so just, because overall it's a bit of a heavier one, and part of what Dave Grohl talks about in the YouTube video we talked about earlier, the animation, is that they got, what the hell is the guy's name? I am terrible today. Greg Kurstin. He's a member of The Bird and the Bee, and he's a pretty big producer right now. And Dave Grohl talks about in it how he just like he knew of him because of Bird and the Bee, and he just like happened to run into him in Hawaii when he was on vacation with his family. And just like Dave, and the story is so good because Dave Grohl just like talking about like he's like a fanboy, like, oh my god, hi, I'm Dave, I'm such a big fan. Like he's like, I'm talking to this guy, and like, oh my god, he's a musical genius. Like it's so cool to see a big guy, like Dave Grohl is such a big name in the music and rock, still floored by the talent of other people. And because of them meeting years before even Sonic Highways came out, he was able to get him to come and be the producer for this album. And he was and one of the things he talks about in the video, he's like, you know, a song like Run, where you have the riff of down and down and down and down. He's like, under his production, it comes dun 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 dun. So like, you just get a whole new, they got a whole new perspective based on his style that they wouldn't have innovated that way before in the first place.
That song is so good too. Run is like, I was saying to Kat, my wife, earlier today, it's got such like a, not like, almost like ZZ Top feel to it. Like it's just, or like Clutch. It's got like a very like Southern rock like riffiness to it that I love. Again, while still feeling like a Foo Fighters song, you know, so much of that is Dave Grohl's voice, obviously, but
even still with the instrumentals, you don't listen to it going like, oh, they totally ripped off this one Lynyrd Skynyrd song. It has that same sort of cadence that you'd get out of a Southern rock song, but it's done in a Foo Fighters way, and that it's clear that they just were like, they blended the two into their own thing.
Plus, the music video is great.
Yeah.
Just like it's basically a nursing home just like rocking out to the song.
Yeah, and just mosh pitting and thrashing out to the Foo Fighters while they're all in like old person makeup. Like Dave Grohl's got like Gandalf style beard just like screaming into a microphone. So good.
Well, Dave, we've come to the end of your playlist. Do you have anything else you want to say about the Foo Fighters before we get into this week's drinking game?
Just if you have listened to like some of their, you know, check them in the radio, some of their bigger hits, and you know of them, really try to, I recommend digging into any of their albums and listen to the ones you've never heard of before, because those songs are just as good, if not more memorable than what, you know, the ones they're known for. Everything is just like such like a good like golden nugget or diamond in the rough of most albums from bands. You got, you know, a couple tracks that are good, and then the rest of the album sounds different, and you don't understand where that went to. With Foo Fighters, every song has its own kind of, you know, sound to it, but it always feels right no matter what you're listening to, and I guarantee you'll love what you hear.
All right. So this week's drinking game is called Common Grohl. Dave Grohl is notoriously eclectic in the sense that he's been involved in recordings for a number of different bands. So I've prepared 9 songs for you, Dave. For each of them, you're going to have to tell me, was Dave Grohl ever in this band?
Oh, son of a bitch.
All right, here's your first one. If you get it wrong, you drink. If I get it right, I'm sorry. If you get it right, I take a drink.
Ace of Spades. I want to say yes.
Wrong. Take a drink. I would say more, except that might ruin things down the line. Ready for the next one?
Yep. Yes?
You're right. I thought I might trick you with this one. So Nirvana was accused of ripping off the riff for Come As You Are from this song. But Dave Grohl eventually played drums for this band, The Killing Joke, down the line. And people were surprised by it specifically because they had thrown so much shade at Nirvana for ripping off that riff.
Yeah.
Ready for the next one?
Yep. I'm gonna say no.
He was in this band. Take a drink. This is them, Crooked Vultures.
Okay.
The super group that he formed.
I don't recognize the song, so... Yes?
You're right. This is Queens of the Stone Age, okay. Which you probably knew that he played in.
Yeah, I just don't recognize the track.
And that's, I went with that on purpose. I tried to play songs like I knew you'd have some sense of what bands he played in, and if it was super obvious to you what band it was from the song,
yeah,
you'd know what it was. So I was a little obscure, but yeah, good call. I'll take a drink.
I'm going to say yes.
No. He never played for the Smashing Pumpkins, which is who this is.
Okay.
It's one of my jams.
Yeah, I'm not a big Pumpkins fan, so I didn't realize it was them at first.
Sure. Ready for the next one?
Let's do it. What right now? 3-for-2? Or no, 2-for-3.
Correct.
It's so different from what the Foo Fighters do. Like, it makes you want to say no, but with how out there Dave Grohl's tastes are, I'm going to say yes.
You're right. It's Nine Inch Nails, and he has played drums for them on a recording.
Nice.
Ready for the next one?
Let's do it. I'm going to say no.
You're right. This is the Stone Temple Pilots. As far as I know, he's never done anything with them musically.
I doubt there's going to be any Tenacious D.
Next one.
Yes.
When you said that, I doubt there's going to be any Tenacious D. I was like, fuck you.
Well, I mean, it's just for you know, did Dave Grohl play with him or not? It's, I don't know. It's an easy one. It's so.
All right, last song. You ready? Right,
let's do it. I'm going to say no.
This is a yes. This is Probot. This is his heavy metal side project.
Okay.
But you did pretty well. I want to say that you got more right than you got wrong.
I think it's about 50-50.
Yeah, it's pretty close. And I don't really have a prize for you either way. That was more for fun than anything.
Just more, can Dave drive home later?
yeah, exactly. But just so I guess I'll leave it to you. Is there anything else you want to say about the Foo Fighters, about Dave Grohl, about... I guess those are the really, really the only two topics.
I guess just to all the guys in the Foo Fighters, just thank you for everything you guys have done over the years.
They're huge fans of the show.
your music has been it's definitely been a light for me a lot of the times over the years, and just your overall attitudes of towards music, and how much you appreciate your fans. And just the opportunity of doing what you're doing, just the fact you haven't lost yourself in your fame, just thank you so much for that, and keeping those of us who love your music in mind.
I guess the only thing I'll say for myself is check out wasted-minds.com. Proud of that website. We've got a drinking game that we're working on there called Drinking Buddies.
It's a good time.
If you go to wasted-minds.com/Drinking Buddies, you can sign up for our Kickstarter campaign, which will start in the next couple of weeks. We'll let you know once it goes live through our mailing list, etc. So check that out. Dave, any last thought? I was going to say any last words, which sounds really...
Man, bring me up back to...
before I murder you. Any last thoughts before we sign off?
Well, keep on rocking.
For everybody listening... Here's to you.
Cheers. The rain is here.